You are listening to the Park Flyer Podcast, where we discuss our RC adventures.
Welcome to the Park Flyer Podcast, where we discuss the ups and downs of the new RC Flyer. Join your hosts, Michael and Jay, as they take flight at the park. Now on with the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Park Flyer Podcast. I'm Michael from Arizona, and with me always are my good friends.
Jay from the hills of Texas.
And Shannon G in Mesa AZ.
And we'd like to welcome you to the Park Flyer Podcast. If you are on our YouTube channel, please hit that like and subscribe. Share us with all your friends and get the word out there. If you're on our Facebook group or if you're on our podcast sites, make sure you give us a thumbs up there as well. But we appreciate you joining us. We talk about all things RC kind of and just kind of touch base. In this episode, we're going to get into some of that, but I have to do a public safety announcement first. So
Are you missing a finger, Mike?
I'm not. Nope. This is a public safety announcement. And it's a very long story that I'm going to compress into a very short amount of time. But I picked up my new Bearcat. If you're on YouTube, you can see it in the back. That's a Vix RC Bearcat. And I was so excited. I was all in that mind frame. Jumped in the car, drove off, got a phone call from the Maricopa County Sheriff's Department. They basically told me on the phone, had my name, my information, all of that stuff, said that I had jury duty, which if you remember, I did have jury duty. I told you guys about it. And that I had missed showing up for my court, my jury duty. Now, I was very confused about it. I told him, I said, no, I called and got released. And he's like, this is a federal jury. And I said, am I supposed to call every day on the federal jury? I thought you were only supposed to call once at the beginning of the week. And he says, no, you have to call every day. This was for a grand jury selection. So you're in some serious trouble. There's two warrants out for your arrest currently right now. And I just panicked because my job, you know, there's other things I got going on. I'm just like, oh my gosh, what do I do? And he said, well, I need you to come down to, and gave me the address of the actual sheriff's department. And I said, okay, I'm headed right there. And he said, well, I have to read you some information. So they read me a bunch of, you know, rigmarole and told me that, you know, they had looked into my records and it wasn't like I was a criminal or nothing, you know, but I was an outstanding citizen and they had talked to the judge. The judge was going to go ahead and do what he calls a DNR, and a DNR is a did not receive. But in order to do the DNR, I had to come in and sign the paperwork, and then they were going to do a signature verification that told me basically, you know, that I didn't receive it, that somebody had sent it in and it wasn't me. And I said, but I think I did send it in. Now what happens? He goes, well, there's fines associated with this. It's $1,500 per case, and you have two. So the case is a contempt of court. There's a warrant for the contempt of court and a warrant for failure to appear. If you just get down here, you know, if you need to stop by your financial institution, you know, please let me know. And I said, yeah. And he's on the phone with me. So I'm driving, you know, to the sheriff's department and swung into the bank, you know, got my money because I'm like, this is the most expensive mistake. I don't ever remember missing this. Why? You know, it just was really confusing. So anyway, long story short, I'm almost to the sheriff's department and he informs me that they don't take cash, that I have to go over to the Safeway and get a voucher. And I'm like, okay. So
What exactly is a voucher, Mike? Because said that to me when you were telling me a story, I didn't exactly know myself. So.
Well, and so the way he explained it was that they stopped, because in the digital world, they stopped taking credit cards, debit cards, because they were getting, you know, scammed or whatever. People weren't paying. And so he said what they do now is that you have to put money on an account. And then when you bring the slip to them at the sheriff's department, then they can collect the payment. And I'm like, okay, that doesn't sound right, but okay. I mean, everything he said has been legit so far. And so when I walked into the, you know, he goes, you can go by the Safeway and just go to the customer service department and they'll give it. So it's like a cashier's check or something. In my head, that's what I was thinking. He kind of made it out like that. So I walked in, I'm still have him on the phone and he goes, oh, are you there? And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, okay, well, there's a machine right there called a Coinstar and you just need to click on that button and then go to Elysium, which is a cryptocurrency. And as soon as I did that, which I did do, because at you know, like I said, my mind was just totally wrapped around this. It said in big red letters, no court or law enforcement entity will ever ask you to pay in cryptocurrency. And right about that time, I got a text from my wife that goes, it's a scam. And I hung up. So I'm going to tell you though, Shannon, it was as real. They had spoofed the number for the sheriff department. They knew everything was going on. He had me hook, line, and sinker up until I got to the Coinstar. And then I'm scratching my head going, wait, why am I at a Coinstar for the courts? So luckily I was downtown and I just jumped in the car, swung over to the federal courthouse and walked in. And as soon as I walked in, they go, you look troubled, sir. And I was like, yeah, I said, I'm on the phone with this officer. So he goes, it's a scam, hang up. So they were very aggressive. They called me back about 15 times. I was texting my wife this whole time. And my wife is like panicked because she's in a meeting and she's trying to figure out, oh my gosh, you know, and we're trying to move money around so I could get the funds to do it. And she just happened to get off the phone and call the court. And the court said, no, we didn't have jury duty that week. Oh. We released him. He's got nothing pending, no warrants, wow. Nothing. And so I finally got off the phone with him, talked to the courts, got all that stuff. I called my wife and she was like, yeah, so I was kind of wondering what was happening here because some of the things that he sent me information on my phone, right? So it was a write-up and everything, and I forwarded it to her, but I can't really see it on the phone. I'm driving. And she was looking at it, and she said, you know, the dates are wrong, and something doesn't, there's not a watermark seal on it, you know. So she started kind of getting kind of that hair standing up on the back of her neck. And then she says to me, yeah, she goes, I thought it was a scam, but then I started thinking, wow, is this a scam for you to get money to go buy a new airplane? Because yeah, she thought I was trying to scam her.
This was awesome. When he told me that the other night, I was in tears. I was like, oh my gosh. Then I had to tell my wife, and she started laughing. She goes, well, it does kind of sound like something you guys would do. And I was like, oh, come on.
I was like, that's a pretty elaborate scam to buy an airplane, though, to tell, like, you know, go pull money out of it.
We'll take the money out, and then we'll just be sheepish. Oh, I wow. guess I should have talked to you first. Right, yeah, I took all that money and spent it. Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, she's like, yeah, that's more like you guys. But,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, it's a public service announcement. If you get really anything, elaborate. The courts told me two things. Number one, you only have to call. Number two, this was the funny part, is she said, how we inform you that you have a warrant out for your arrest?
I'm going to try it.
Up for breakfast. I'll see you guys later. And say, hey, we're here for breakfast. Here's a warrant for your arrest. She goes, we don't announce that or call you. And second thing, she said, if you failed to appear in court, you would literally have a certified letter 24 hours later, not a month later. Because this is, you know, that was back in February. So, but it just caught me off guard. He knew all my information. I showed her and she's like, yeah, we have no idea how they're doing it. But it is a big scam. It is on their website. And so just in case, it's going throughout the country now. They're kind of preying on citizens who are, you know, kind of like me, that I'm a law abiding citizen. I've done jury duty, the whole deal, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, now they're saying, okay, well, that guy, you know, we can get him. But it wasn't until I got to the cryptocurrency thing that all my bells and whistles went off, because I was too busy trying to figure out. And Jay brought up a good point. He said, you should have just said, I need to talk to my lawyer, you know, because that anytime you say that, they're going to be like, okay, get back with us and hang up. But I wasn't thinking about it at the time, because he had said, oh, it's already being dismissed. Yeah. We just need you to come in and do the signature verification. So I wasn't really thinking. He knew all the right things to say. So stay away from the scams. I was. Yeah, I was very, very close.
Speak to my lawyer.
I wasn't going to. Well, there was
a couple of things. A, he told Michael, you know, at one point, he was placing him under arrest, you know, and I was like, what cop, how can you be under arrest when he's not physically there?
Yeah.
Arrest is a physical thing. He has to be there and physically take charge of you. So he's over the phone, because he was like, don't get out of the car. Don't go anywhere else. Yeah. Keep me on the phone the whole time. And I'm just like, okay, so he was isolating you from people, because you know, it's hard to text. It's hard to do all those other things on the phone. So, you know, it was a perfect storm, you know, and that's usually how how scams kind of work. It's a perfect storm. And if you get caught up on it, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of, you know, and it's kind of one of those things, right? Because it just happened and my mind wasn't in, I was too happy about something else and I wasn't even thinking about it. And it just kind of, the cards just started laying down, and it troubles me because every time I tell the story, because it just happened, you know, a couple of days ago. And every time I tell the story, everybody goes, first words out of their mouth is when I say, I got a call from that. They go, it's a scam. You know, it's like, why does everybody know this except me? I mean, everybody in town knows that this was a scam and I got suckered in, but I didn't lose the money. And the lady at the court said I was lucky that they only asked for $3,000. She said, we've had people come in here that lost $5,000 in cash.
Wow.
And once you put it on the cryptocurrency, the government can't go get it back because they have no idea where it went.
Yeah,
it's gone.
So it's gone.
Yeah, yeah, it's gone.
So that was my other thing. I said
we're in the wrong line of business, folks.
Well, no, but you know, what's the one thing the government does not like? They hate crypto.
They crypto.
Absolutely hate it because they have no control over it. So why would they start, oh, well, we're taking payment in crypto. I was just like, man, that totally does not make sense.
Well, and there's a big red sign on there. I mean, as soon as you log in and you touch it, it's a huge public service announcement. And I told him that. I said, hey, this says, and he goes, don't look at that. We've already passed that. I read all that stuff to you. You know, go ahead and skip that page. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And anyway, it was just kind of crazy. So it brings us to the kind of a topic. What's that?
Was the voice,
what were you saying,
I was going to say, was the voice, the person talking to you, was there any, were they just that convincing? Like there wasn't any, you know, thought, oh my gosh, this is, you know,
no
accent. No. Okay.
No, the first guy that talked to me was a little mumbly. It just sounded like he was, sometimes it sounds like Jay when he's tired, you know, he's like, hey, what's going on? You know, it was kind of like that. Like he's having to read all this stuff all the time, but he identified himself Deputy Sheriff Cole. Yeah, it was. He identified
Jay,
himself.
Our plan didn't work,
Cole.
Jay. He didn't buy it. Don't I sound like the other guy you talked to?
Darn. We almost had that plane.
I know, right? That's terrible. That's funny. Anyway, they did identify themselves as a deputy sheriff, and he gave me his badge number, which sounded legit. You know, like I said, he gave me the everything was legit, and then he transferred me over to a different department. And that guy picked up the phone and said, you know, Captain, whatever his name was, Jay Stevenson or something. And he's like, hey, it's Captain Jay Stevenson with the Maricopa Sheriff's Department. How can I help you? And I said, yeah, they transferred me. He's like, oh, yeah, I got your case here, blah, blah, blah. And he gave me the case numbers and stuff, you know, that I wrote down. And so they were very legit, very, very, very legit. And I talked to the attorney general the next day, and she said that, yeah, that was the 10th call that day. Mine was the 10th call. They'd already had 10 people already get scammed.
10th caller gets a free scam.
You know, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I know, right? That's what I say. What do I get? So, I know, right?
Call your friends.
It is a kind of a lead in to what we're talking about now, because Jay and I and several of our listeners, I think, all purchase, you know, used type airplanes and secondhand planes. Jay is a real expert at it. You can see behind him, there's a lot of airplanes that he's picked up on Craigslist or eBay or wherever it is. And so, we were talking about it, you know, because I have a used, we talked about the Zeroli. I picked it up and you know, we were just going to talk about maybe a little bit, and then a little time that we have left is what are some of the things that, you know, kind of we should look out as purchasers. So, you know, Jay, you're kind of the expert at this. Why don't you kind of give us a little kind of, how do you go about doing that?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I'm always looking for whenever, you know, when our season's coming up is I'm always looking for new projects or something to talk about, you know, conversions from, you know, from electric to gas. That's one that's coming up. So I was looking for a model, you know, a gas model that I could use, you know, to do this with. And luckily my buddy Jim gave me a plane that's perfect for it. But you know, other things like gliders and other stuff that I'm looking for, I find or given to me, you know, outright, and I'm able to modify them or you know, get them ready to refly. You know, like maybe somebody gives me an older plane, right? And they had like an old brush motor on it, and then you know, and then we'll do a segment about updating that and looking out. Right. Well, how do you select that motor, etc. But just like anything else, whenever you know you're looking for these planes, you know, you gotta do a little bit of research, you know, and it's kind of hard because sometimes you're getting an older plane, right? Maybe they haven't sold that plane in 8 years. So, you know, you have to find some information out about it. Think about what you're going to need for that plane, or what came or did not come with that plane that you're going to have to add to the plane. So, you know, it takes a little bit of research. It's not too hard. It's fairly easy, but then comes the most difficult part of buying any of this stuff. And that's getting on Craigslist or Facebook Messenger or whatever, Facebook, to, you know, find that plane, because this is the part that kills me, right? I want to buy a plane. This person's selling a plane. It should be easy. Hey, I want to buy your plane. And then the person never talks to you or ghosted. You know, answers your message back. And it just kills me. And sometimes, I mean, I get replies months after I've replied to the guy's plane. He's like, oh, hey, man, I didn't see your message. Are you still interested? Because I still have the plane. Nobody ever talked to me about it. Mm-hmm. You know, and sometimes I get them, right? You know, and I'm just like, yeah, you were asking, you know, $50 for it. Well, you know, I'll take it for 25 if you want to, you know, I'll take it for 10 or something. They're like, oh, I just want to get rid of it. Okay, great. So it's kind of worked out for me in that regards. But the next part of it is you get to show up, pick up the model, and then you go, oh, okay. So now this is the most difficult part of it, right? You're there, you're at the guy's place, you're buying, or you're, you know, where you're going to buy it from. And on the surface, it looks good, maybe, you know, or maybe there's some telltale signs. Maybe the covering is torn if it's an older wooden model, and you can tell that, like, it was stored outside or something, and there's water damage in it because it's swollen in certain places. So this is where the little bit of detective work, the, you know, having a good eagle eye and looking at different stains that may be on the model to kind of give you a hint or a clue. Are there rust stains on the monocoque? Are there, you know, where he said, you know, they may tell you, oh, I crashed it, you know, and it, see, but, you know, I just glued it all back together. And you may look at it real quick and go, oh, okay. Well, you know, well, you really got to look at where they said they crashed it, because did it split the model in half from from aft to stern type of thing? You know, not like a little crack, but I mean, they split the model in half. Did they rip the gear out? Did they, you know, which isn't too bad. That happens a lot on models, and that's okay for that kind of damage. But when they go, oh, it just broke a little bit of the wing off. Well, you don't realize that what they're talking about split the wing in half, you know, and they kind of glued it back together. You know, so then you have to go, you know, that's where it gets hard, because they might have repaired it and monocoated over it or painted over it. And you're like, you know, looking at it. So you have to kind of get in there, flex. It's kind of like picking fruit. You know, you have to kind of squeeze it and manipulate it to kind of get a good idea as to what may or may not be wrong with that thing. And that's where it gets really, really difficult, because then it comes down to how can you repair something. All right. You know, it's one thing if you broke off a wing tip. It's another thing if you broke the main root of the plane, and you have to do major, you know, surgery on that thing. Or like you said, did it rip out the gear, and like he has the gear and it's sitting there, you know, is it a clean break? Did it break, you know, the box that the whole box of the thing was sitting in, so that, you know, it's all pulverized, you know, balsa dust. So you have to, you know, actually recut out the members or the frames for that stuff, you know, maybe, you know, and like I said, sometimes you get the plans with it and that's no big deal. But a lot of times you don't have any plans and you're just going to have to wing it. So you have to kind of know your own level of, you know, how well you can repair stuff. Like I said, my buddy Jim, he just can look at something and just copy it and just remake it. It's just incredible to see him go to work and how he can just fix things. And he makes his repairs make the plane even better than what it was before. And, you know, where it might have had a little flex, that thing ain't flexing. It's, you know, it's solid as ever. So it's just amazing. So, you know, I know it's kind of a wishy-washy answer, you know, to kind of go, oh, it's, you know, it's easy to buy used planes. It's not a big problem, but you have to know your own capabilities and have to be a good assessor as to how bad of a fix is this going to be, you know, because, you know, if you just go, the guy just says, oh, this thing ripped off, and you know, like you said, it ripped the main spar out of the plane, you know, how much is it going to cost for a carbon rod for the plane? You know, carbon rods, a tube, you know, out of a plane, if it's ripped out or damaged and you have to replace it, may cost more than the plane to just replace that, you know, the rod. So, you know, just little things
honestly,
have to be aware of.
There's a lot of airplanes that people will sell. I'm really bad about it. I've got several airplanes that they don't make anymore, and you know, I could sell them. I like to fly them if I get a chance, but you know, they're kind of nostalgic, and I have some that, you know, they're in good condition, but they just don't make parts for them anymore, and you can't find anything. And so people, you know, they get to the point where they're like, right. Well, there's nothing to fix this with. And so, you know, I might as well might as well sell it. And some of them, like mine, I've flown, you know, two times since I bought it, and it's got hangar rash on it from moving it around for two different moves. But, you know, at the same time, it's a flyable and it's, you know, perfectly viable. You know, the Bearcat, I kind of decided I wanted to kind of redo the wing structure on it because of the, you know, basically the airplane had flying and it got wrecked. And so, you know, the body and everything is in really good condition, but you know, the wings needed a little bit of tender loving care. And so, you know, it's just things that you can kind of look at and see, but on the other side of that, Jay, there, you can find some really good deals. You know, Scott, we had him on the podcast a couple, you know, episodes ago. He was online. He found that Stutka that I had in the shop for a while. He flew that at Winter Warbirds, and he got an incredible deal on that. And the guy that he bought it from was a Futaba rep and had, you know, the whole airplane was spotless. When he told me what he paid for it, I was shocked. I was shocked. It was less than the kit.
He's the guy we love to hate.
Well, him and Barry as well, right? Because Barry just got one as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They just have the luck. Maybe I don't. They just have the luck with that.
Well, but Barry just got a half scale Christian Eagle
737.
So, ooh. And he got it for the price of the motor.
Nice.
And the motor's brand new in the box.
Wow.
So what were you saying, there, awesome. Shannon?
Wow.
So my 737/P8 Poseidon, perfect example of this. I saw it on Facebook Marketplace, and you know, I could tell it needed some things. And the guy tried to explain to me what it was. It was missing the. It was like an estate sale. Somebody bought it. They probably flew it, but it was missing the spar, which isn't a big deal because they still make that plane, or at least they still get parts for it. And you know, when it got to the point of meeting the person, it was one of our common friends, Brian Rhodes. He just didn't know. He had a different name. He was under a different name on Facebook for whatever reason. But so when I got that, you know, I got a really good deal on it, and I knew what I was getting into. I'm like, well, I can get the parts for this plane. I know what's what with this.
Right.
You know, the manual you can download. I had a servo go out. That servo was nothing to replace. And, you know, after getting it roughly airborne, I stripped it down, repainted it, and I, you know, fly the heck out of it. I've got, you know, I won first place at the jet rally for electric jet with it. So
yes,
perfect example of like, you know, taking a basket case of a plane. Cause the average person would be like, oh, I'm not going to do anything with this. This is junk. And right. No, this was perfect for me. So I'd say about 80% of my planes, if not more, are used. I think I've bought in my planes I'm currently flying. There's three that I've bought new. Now the used ones, some of the used ones might have been like one flight, you know, or you know, like Bob Roth, he'll fly it three or four times and it's for sale, so, that kind of deal,
right?
It's like I kind of live off of the deal of used aircraft. That's one of the huge parts of our hobby that I love, that you can get a really cool plane without buying the farm initially.
Yeah. Sure. And there's some really, really, really great deals out there. I mean, that's the important part about it, is that, you know, I think if you're one of those that doesn't really have the time, effort, or want to put in the effort to redo something like Shannon did, or, you know, like I did with the Cessna, the big Cessna was another one that, you know, I'm pretty much where if I see something damaged in there, I know I can put it back to the way it was. And so I start digging in, and the next thing you know, I'm, you know, got the whole airplane gutted and starting with you know, all the stuff that I want to put in there, which is, you know, fine. There's no loss, you know, no reason you can't do that. Just may take a little bit more time, and it's, you know, basically now I understand what's in it, and, you know, I took a bunch of stuff out. So, but it can't, what I want to at least portray is that you shouldn't be scared of purchasing, you know, planes that are secondhand, you know, basically. And even, you know, if you're not good enough to, or are not really skilled enough to, you know, kind of redo the whole airplane, then maybe don't buy a, you know, something that's a big, you know, wrecked pile. But there are guys that do that. I mean, you know, one of the guys that we know here at our club, he does that. He'll buy airplanes that are almost destroyed, and they're fiberglass, you know, and it's hard, you know, a lot of people don't work well with fiberglass, and he'll put the whole airplane back together like it was brand new with panel lines and everything. So, you know, and then he wins awards with it as well. And you're just like, oh, I saw that airplane when it came in on a Greyhound bus in parts. I mean, literally it was just chunks of pieces stuck in a box. You could barely tell it was an airplane, and now it's things flying around winning, you know, all kinds of awards on it. So, and then, you know, when he goes to sell it, it's basically been redone, although that airplane was wrecked. I mean, you know, he could probably ask top dollar for this thing because it's in really, really, really good condition now that he put it all back together. So that, you know, that's a skill that that people have. Jim's kind of like that. I mean, you know, I think if you're in this hobby for more than just, you know, just going out to the park and flying around, that's kind of half, you know, I got several builds going on, and most people do. It's kind of fun. And if you live up north or in a colder area that, you know, you don't have a full flying season like we do, you know, gives you something to do during the non-flying seasons,
which is the summer here.
But that is the summer here, and that's kind of why I got these out, because it's kind of hot out there. But we're still flying.
Yeah, I got three or four projects that are gonna be here by fall.
I actually went flying not too long ago. I flew the OV-10. I maidened it, and kind of a quick story before we go. We're kind of running out of time, but I was going to let you know that I did fly the OV-10. When I got out there, I think I told Jay, I called him afterwards, and I was like, man, this airplane is really squirrely. Like, I took off, and the whole airplane just started, the tail end of that thing with those twin booms was just over-exaggerating. It was, you know, yawing really hard. It was everything I could do to control it. I almost lost it. And I chopped the throttle, landed it, and I thought, whew, you know, my heart rate was up, because I was like, dude, this was a gift from, you know, Scott for coming out the Winter Warbirds and hanging out with me. He sent that to me, and he's got one and said it flies perfect. And I watched the videos. Everybody flies perfect. Why is my flying like this? And so I took off again, and I put three batteries through it and realized that, you know, I just kind of started fine-tuning all of the control surfaces, and the rudder just almost was down to nothing. I mean, I barely had any rudder usage at all. It did not like it when I put rudder in for a turn or any of that stuff. It just started wallowing around. And I thought, I have a Demon Cortex. And so I thought, well, maybe the Demon settings are too high for this particular one. So I kind of dialed those down a little bit. And then the other day, I went out and flew it again. I put two batteries through it. It flew okay, but it's still kind of, you know, just a little wonky. I tried to roll, because the first two, three, I didn't really do any maneuvers, but the roll that I did was a heart thumper, because when I got that thing upside down, it just pitched right down to the ground. And luckily I was a couple mistakes high and was able to chop the throttle and kind of get it back. But it was an exciting flight, and Barry was there, and he's like, oh my gosh, what's up with that? You know? And I just go, I don't know, there's something wrong with this plane. And so I handed the controller to him, and he flew about 37 seconds and goes, and he handed me the controller back. He goes, not me. And Barry's a good pilot. I mean, Barry's like, you know, he can figure it out too. We've maidened a lot of, you know, airplanes for a lot of people, and he flies a lot of stuff. He flew that, literally didn't even get around the whole circuit, and was like, yeah, I'm not going to be responsible. This thing is not right. And so he handed it back to me, and, you know, he goes, I think your rudder is moving backwards. I was like, it's not moving backwards. It moves the right direction. So I brought it in, set it down. He picked it up. He went, ring, ring. Your Demon is backwards on the rudder. And I was like, no way. I redid that thing three times. He goes, nope. So we walked over and we turned all of it up and we did it again. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And so I must have gone left when I should have gone right, and gone right when I should have went left. but we rebound it. We redid the, you know, the learning, and he's like, now go fly it. And as soon as it took off, man, it was just 180 degrees different. That airplane flew amazing. We had low passes. We did wing over. It rolled beautifully because, you know, with the rudder, as soon as I put a little bit of rudder to keep the nose up, it just pitched down with the gyro thinking it was going the other way. And I had flown it with the gyro on, gyro off, you know, because I was trying to figure out if it was a gyro issue, but it seemed to have done the same thing with the gyro off in my eyes. And I think it was just a carryover from the gyro doing things. And then when I took it out, there was no correction to it. So it just, you know, anyway, that is our safety tip for today. Right. That make sure you check your control services. Story and don't life. Put six batteries through it before you figure it out. Because luckily for me, I was able to get it back on the ground.
So, Mike, I gotta ask. So when you did your preliminary, see, this is one of those things, this has happened, not mm-hmm. to just pick on you, but I mean, this has happened to all of us. You know, we do always, a function check always. Before we take off, right? Right, left, up, down, that's aileron, correct. This, what, that. And yet, this is something that, you know, you didn't catch until Barry flew the plane and then said, hey,
so
man,
the function
this
check
right.
is correct.
Like, no, it's right.
The rudders were moving in the right direction. The gyro was correcting the same way.
Oh, so it's mm-hmm. so what? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's
which
what
you don't
saying.
You know.
Okay,
normally,
gotcha.
You so only when, check. I right. check the gyro right, okay. here on the table. I pick it up. That one comes up. That one comes up. That one goes you know up. That goes up. That goes left. That goes right. Okay, that's perfect. Right.
Yeah, you know, typically
right,
you just
right.
shake
once I got
it, to make
it
sure
set up,
working,
and so
right?
for me, hey, okay, I actually whenever I change,
yeah. Yeah,
whenever
okay,
I change
gotcha,
something
gotcha.
On the
now
airplane, I always
okay.
rebind it. Like if I move something or take something out of the receiver, and I'm using the Demon mm-hmm. as a receiver. So if I remove the bat, if I remove the wires, I always go back in and rebind it, and then I relearn it. Because I don't want, you know, if I change settings or whatever, I want it to be the same. So I did that three different times. And on the third time,
gotcha.
I was just so quick at it, you know, because I did it three times within an hour or something, you know, before I went and flew it. And I think that, you know, I'm thinking in my head, okay, you have to go up, down, left, right. And then on the rudder, you go right, left instead of left, right. So I was going right. up, down, left, right. And then I went and flew it. And I just was incredibly lucky. That if I'd have been lower to the ground or if I'd have tried to roll it lower yep. to the ground, it would have definitely been devastating. But now I'm in love with the thing. I need to buy some more batteries because it uses four-cell 4,000 milliamp batteries. We went and flew it and just putting around and doing what an OV-10 does was so much fun. I actually flew it for 7 minutes and only had 71% left on my battery. So I stuck it back in there and flew another 7 minutes and I wound up with 49%. So I flew a full 14 minutes on one set of batteries. So it was pretty, the motors are very efficient. It was very, very, very fun. And I can't wait to go out and fly it again. This episode, don't get scammed.
Nice.
Make sure you look over your used airplanes and then make sure you're moving the right direction if you're using a gyro. So. But holy smokes. So, well, we appreciate everybody's patronages listening to us. We are out of time. But if you have a used airplane, go ahead and comment in the comment sections. We finally turned those on. For some reason, they were off. I think it's because we said that it was a safe for kids, and then they eliminate the comments. But we do have comments open. So go on to our YouTube channel. Once again, give us a like, subscribe, click that bell, share with it. Give us a comment. Let us know how we're doing. We'd love to hear from our listeners. And I think next time we'll talk about maybe the Crescendo Maidens because I got one of those. I think Jay's got a new one coming out, so we're gonna go try those out, hopefully, and figure out how that works. There you go, perfect. So, but we're out of time. So for Michael here in Arizona,
and Jay from the hills of Texas,
and Shannon G and Macy Z,
we will see you in 2 weeks.
Let's fly.
You have been listening to the Park Flyer Podcast. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to your next visit. Please give our show a star rating and review, and feel free to email us your questions, topics, or suggestions to parkflyerpodcast@gmail.com.